Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, where 24 hours can make a world of difference. We were with you yesterday after the Cubs lost Game 3. We were down. We were depressed. And when we started the podcast, we were kind of talking a little bit about this before we started on the air. And all I saw from Isaac was a huge fist pump before he even said a word. And that's kind of how Cubs Nation is probably feeling tonight. My name is Carlos Portaker. I'm joined by Isaac Davis. Isaac Davis, I said it again. Isaac Bennett.
No.
Isaac Bennett and Ryan Davis. I want to start with you, Isaac, because you kind of tempered us the most last night, I feel, when you said, hey, we let our emotions swing too wildly one way or the other. I fear that I might be too wildly on the positive side tonight after being too wild on the negative side last night. So take us somewhere in the middle in this divided nation that we live in, Isaac. What did you see today? What did you what signs did you see of the Cubs today in this victory?
Well, look, a game like this always reminds me that I will be fan first and analyst second probably for my whole life, and I am not ashamed to admit that for one second. So, look, like you said, the first thing that I did when I got on with you was I fist pumped. I was thrilled. I was writing the recap for BP Wrigleyville tonight, and as I watched Addison Russell's home run sail over the center field fence, it took me about a full 10 seconds to register what had just happened, and then I screamed at the top of my lungs. It was such a moment filled with ecstasy that I could hardly contain it. But I'll temper the excitement again. I felt like that the Cubs are still very much in this series coming in to tonight, and I feel like the Dodgers are still very much in this series after tonight. So, look, this was a must-win game for the Cubs, and they came out and did exactly what they needed to do. And now we've got a heck of a three-game series with a bunch of great pitching on the mound, and I'm thrilled, and I just can't wait to watch it.
Before we look ahead into the rest of the games, I want to hear from you, Ryan, on how you took this game.
Yeah, I kind of echo what Isaac said pretty much with all of that. We tend as fans to get too high with the good times and too low with the bad. I had been feeling kind of down lately, but that's mostly because I've looked at the playoffs as a whole and thought the offense really just has looked completely out of sync since the beginning. And it's not just it's only two games. Yeah, they got dominated by two great pitchers, but let's not forget they scored 17 runs in four games, and six of those runs were driven in by pitchers in the NLDS. So they weren't scoring then. And then, they scored three runs off Maeda early in game one, and then didn't really score again until the eighth inning when they kind of busted open against Blanton. And even part of that was two intentional walks to Chris Coughlin and Jason Hayward that were kind of inexplicable. So I try not to get too high with this, but it really looks good to see Rizzo looking good at the plate again and Russell looking good at the plate again. And the Cubs just really doing what they do and looking like they did for the majority of the year with the offense. And that's not about scoring 10 runs. It's about, you know, having good at bats and getting decent results out of it. And, you know, just, yeah, kind of looking ahead, like Isaac said, this puts them in a good position, but, they've stolen home field back because they have, you know, the final two games at Wrigley Field. But, it's a heck of a three-game series when you've got Maeda, Kershaw, Hill as the remaining three.
Totally. And I want to focus on just a couple of the moments that I felt were key in this game. And in that second inning, when I was still kind of feeling the nervous tension from last night, when Hayward threw out Gonzalez at the plate, that was a huge, huge play. And when I saw him kind of, I thought he was a little casual coming up and throwing the ball thinking, Gonzalez, there's no way they're waving him around. He's going to get gunned down, you know. So when the throw came in and it was a close call, it was not the best throw. It was a close play. But I think the Cubs got a break in that the initial call was out, because whatever the initial call was on that play, that's what was probably going to stand. And that was a huge momentum shift. The fans, on, you know, watching the replay on the big screen, they all thought it was a done deal that he was safe. I thought
I did too.
You know what? I honestly thought it was they got there at the exact same time. That the tag kind of started on Gonzalez's chin and right when the hand hit the home plate. But either way, because that initial call was out, that's what kind of held through, and that's what the call was, and that was huge because if the Cubs go down 1-0 there, then it's like, oh, here we go again. Granted, from my perspective, not from the players have been very upbeat and they've maintained the faith in their team, which is what they should be doing, but I thought that was a big moment.
Yeah, and I wrote in the recap that Hayward had a perceptible pause in coming up and throwing that. And I think it was simply because he was stunned that they were sending Gonzalez, mm-hmm. who I called a notable truck, you know, wagon puller. if he comes up throwing, which he needs to be doing instinctively, that was a mental error on Hayward. If he comes up throwing and delivers even a decent throw, he's out by 4 or 5 steps. Mm-hmm. So the fact that play was even close was a gaffe on Hayward, which the only reason he's in the game at this point is for his defense. So that was rough, but you're so right. Had that play been called on the field differently, it would have stood as safe. Had they scored that run, I think the direction of the game may have gone a completely different direction, and that really felt like a series turning event in the moment, and especially now in retrospect. And look, I'll take it. I don't think you could have overturned that call either way, as you said. So I'll take it.
I thought it was a huge break. I felt like there was a clear moment where the tag was not yet on Gonzalez, where the hand or the fingers were on home plate. I guess they decided that they didn't know for sure if the fingers were on or just hovering above home plate. I guess if you're going to make that argument, you could probably make that argument on every single replay ever, because you never really can see exactly, because the home plate's white, where the hand is in relation to it. So, you're right. It's a huge break for the Cubs, and it felt really big at the moment. Any Dodgers fans complaining about it being a blown call, they might have a case there, but in reality, in a 10-2 game, it didn't matter in the end. My question for you, and I'm very curious, Isaac, what you think. You said yourself that the only reason Hayward's in the game is for his defense. Do you think his defense is measurably different or measurably better than Albert Almora in right field?
No, I don't. I don't think it's measurably better than Almora. I would have played Soler or Almora before I played Hayward tonight. I was pretty vocal about that on Twitter.
Well, what I was going to say is, and I was kind of anticipating that answer, if it's not measurably better than Almora, I can't imagine that his offense is, you know, in any way close to what Almora could provide, even given Almora as an unknown. Why not Almora over Hayward just about every single game at this point?
I don't know, and especially against a lefty, right? I mean, I can understand getting Hayward in there against a righty, but against a lefty, I really believe that Hayward needs to be on the bench. You're going to face Kershaw and Hill again in this series, and Hayward needs to be on the bench. Is he the best right fielder the Cubs have? Yeah, he is. Is he demonstrably better than Almora? I don't think so, and he's definitely better than Soler, but you needed that right-handed stick in there tonight, I thought. Look, it worked out, but Hayward was the one guy that didn't contribute anything on offense, and he did make a defensive gaffe. So it's time to sit him down, especially against lefties.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that the one contribution he did make early when it looked like it might have mattered was that RBI on a 4-3 ground out.
The good old Hayward special.
Yeah, I know. That is amazing, right? His one contribution was a 4-3.
Yeah, when they showed the infield playing back, I'm sitting there watching the game with my wife, and I was like, for once this season, please go ahead, do what you want to do. I know you want to ground it to the second baseman. Just do it.
I was telling my father-in-law the same thing. I was like, he always does this, and we always get so upset, but now is the time for him to break this move out. He's like, why are you so angry at him? I'm like, just wait. Well, that's a good question in terms of, you know, Hayward and his defense. And I think even the broadcast team on tonight brought it up in terms of Contreras. made that nice throw behind the runner to kind of get some momentum going in the Cubs' favor. He's making good contact with the ball. What happens? I mean, you've got all these other left-handers coming in. Tomorrow you've got John Lester. So, you know, we know who's going to be behind the plate. Do you make room for Contreras in the outfield?
Yes.
Yes.
He'll be in left, right, with Bryant and Wright.
Maybe.
He hasn't played Bryant in the outfield yet, right?
Yeah, he's been pretty religious about putting Baez at second base, which I like because he's measurably better as a second baseman than he is as a third baseman, and he's a very good third baseman. But Baez,
right? Maybe, so yeah, you're right. So Zobrist and Wright, I misspoke there.
Yeah, Baez may be the best second baseman in the game defensively, but I just don't see. Considering the way he's hit, and you might be able to say matchups or whatever, but Contreras has been absolutely phenomenal the entire playoffs. I don't see at this point the way the offense has been, for the most part, taking away today. I don't see how you can sit Wilson Contreras another single game in this series, even with a righty on the mound in game five. You absolutely have to get him in every single game as a starter, whether it's left field or catcher. So he will not be catching tomorrow, but he will be catching game six. And I would even go out on a limb and say if they're playing game seven with Arrieta, he may be catching that game too.
Well, as much as I agree that I want Contreras out there somewhere, he's .222 with an OPS of .444 in the playoffs. So it's not like he's been a thunderstick or anything like that. I mean, he actually hasn't hit too much. I thought his defensive contributions tonight were massive, but his bat's been relatively tepid in the playoffs.
Wilson Contreras, really?
I'm just reading stats, man.
I thought Contreras was hitting pretty well. I thought he was like 5-for-10 in the NLCS.
It just feels like it, man.
Yeah.
Wilson Contreras' batting line in the postseason this year, 500 batting average, 545 on base, 500 slugging.
You're right. This is this series, what I just said.
Oh, yeah. He was 1-for-4 coming into today. I don't know what he did today, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, he was 4-for-6 in the NLDS. So he came into today 5-for-10 with a run scored, and he had that big single in game four of the NLDS. So I mean, just the way he's looked at the plate, especially against the Giants, I would say he absolutely has to be in there.
Yeah, I think he needs to too. So 6-for-15. But it's just, I mean, the broader point there is still Hayward, right? The guy just is not hitting. And I mean, I won't hold the defensive gaffe too much against him tonight, but he's an automatic out at this point. And you need a guy that can actually put the ball in play, move the ball a little bit, and have a chance to, you know, create some runs. And I think Wilson's that guy.
I hate to say it, but Jason Hayward might need to start thinking about laying down a bunt or two.
You win. All the props to you. That was such a moment. Wow.
And you know what? Because I think a lot of people hear that and they think, oh, yeah, lay down a bunt. Like, oh, just bunting for the sake of bunting is dumb. And I agree. Bunting for the sake of bunting is dumb. But when you're just getting schooled like that and nothing seems to be working, sometimes it's worth a shot. And Ben Zobrist tried it out and it happened to work this time. So kudos to me for that. I'll just pat myself on the back for that one.
Yeah, I'll pat you on the back for that one, too, because when I saw Zobrist do it, it was the perfect bunt. Mm-hmm. It was in the perfect spot, and when I saw it, when I saw it rolling, I was like, that's a base hit all day. And I thought to myself, that just feels like the monkey off the back hit. Mm-hmm. That leadoff bunt that gets you on base, that in the moment I thought, you know, maybe they hit into a double play, maybe they don't score in this inning, who knows what's going to happen. But at the moment I thought, that really feels like the breakout, the moment of the first event that starts a chain reaction that could be positive in it. And it happened that way.
Yeah, it really did. And just everything went right for the Cubs. But seeing Russell and Rizzo go 6-for-10 with two home runs tonight, too. And just the way the Rizzo one happened with, you know, yanking a home run foul, and then apologizing to the umpire for taking off too fast, which umpires hate. And then going ahead and depositing one into the right center field bleachers again was just, it was great. And it just felt like those two guys, like I think you just said, Ryan, the monkey felt like it was off their back for sure.
Using Matt Caesar's bat.
I know. How weird is that? Yeah. Whatever it takes, man.
So I think this is a talking point that maybe we don't really need to cover much on because I think it's kind of ridiculous. But you did bring it up on Twitter, Ryan. So I'll ask you the question. This rumor or this idea of Clayton Kershaw coming back and pitching tomorrow on short rest seems ridiculous. But do you think there's any chance that we'll see that happen?
I don't think so. I think it goes to Maeda, and I don't think the Dodgers have any second guesses about that. The one reason that I brought it up was because I think this is an interesting idea. If they pitch him on 3 days rest, which the Dodgers have never been shy about doing before, they could bring him back in relief in game 7. And we're not talking about just like a side session of like, you know, bring him in like they did the other day where they brought him in for like 7 pitches. I mean, they could realistically bring him in for game 7 and have him toss 2 or 3 innings. So that's the only reason that I think that it could be a consideration. But I agree with generally what the storm of people who I think thought I was insinuating that's my thought or my original idea of bringing him back on 3 days rest tomorrow, which is not the case at all. The storm of people shouting me down about it pretty much agree with my sentiment that I don't think it's a good idea. I think that you put him out for game 6 because no matter what the Cubs do tomorrow, they have to stare at Clayton Kershaw either possibly closing them out or taking them to game 7.
And then the other question is, and that's on Madden pulling John Lackey today. I was a little bit surprised, but I wasn't kind of as upset as Lackey was, obviously. He was walking people. It ended up working out, but what did you guys think of him getting pulled relatively early in the game?
I think I would have given him one more batter, to be honest. I didn't have a huge issue with it, but I thought that he deserved one more batter there. And coming from me, that's saying something. But I didn't have a huge issue with it. I mean, you go out there and walk two guys, and you kind of just know that that's coming if you do that against the 8 and 9 holes. You just really can't afford to let that go any further. But I thought, you know, Lackey handled it really respectfully when he just kind of nodded and said, you know, Joe, you're the manager. I respect your authority. And here's the ball. it was a classy move by a classy guy. You've taken
advanced lip reading classes. I like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was reading his lips. I was seeing something totally different.
I think he was talking about his duck or something. I couldn't quite tell.
His duck was kidding him, I think.
maybe I was wrong. I'm not sure.
I put this out there on the BP Wrigleycast Twitter account. I put out a poll shortly after he pulled him before the two runs came in, and I said, would you have pulled Lackey or let him try to get out of it? And we got a decent amount of votes in a short period of time, 71 votes, and 70, and even 70%. I don't know how you get that with 71, but they said that they would have pulled him. I tend to agree. I would have let him pitch. I know walking the 8 and the 9 hitters is pretty bad right there, but I maybe would have had Montgomery warming, gone out to the mound, talked to Lackey and said, hey, get your you know what together. We've got a 5-0 lead. You know, you need to throw strikes and get these batters out. And, you know, if you give up 2 hits, that's fine. I think Smoltz even said that. If you give up 2 hits to the 8 and 9 hitters, fine, mm-hmm. but don't go out and walk these guys. And you know, Lackey has that experience. He'd been pitching, you know, he'd had a couple spots, but he'd been pitching pretty well up until that moment. So I would have given him a longer leash, especially with a 5-run lead. But I mean, it all's well that ends well, but I'm sure Lackey's not happy about not even getting the opportunity to get through the 5th inning.
Yeah, it's As the pitch count was going up for Urias, who pitched very well. I mean, it didn't work out for him, but he pitched very well. I was like, okay, pitch count's going up. This is going to be the bullpen is going to come in for the Dodgers and have to throw a lot. And they did. And the Cubs, you know, managed to get some work in. It felt like for Strope and for Rondon. So that was good. But Ryan, you had a point you wanted to make about pitch counts.
Yeah, I wanted to point this at Isaac and kind of laugh about how he and I at times have kind of griped all year about Madden letting his starters go a little too long. And just off the top of my head here, Lester's 77 pitches in game one. Hendricks was done 5 1/3 in game two. I can't remember how many pitches, but I want to say it was less than 90. Game three, Arrieta 83 pitches, done. Game four, Lackey 72 pitches, done.
Yeah.
Are we missing something here? I
He's
mean,
finally saving their arms.
it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean that's insane. I mean, I get, I would say that pulling Lackey when he did is borderline. I mean, it's at least arguable. Pulling Arrieta was the right choice. Pulling Hendricks was the right choice. Pulling Lester was, I don't think that was the right choice at all, but it worked, so whatever. But yeah, I just think that's really interesting that he's finally saving their arms.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I was actually talking to Matt Trueblood about this very thing today, and he was sort of in our camp of feeling like that they'd maybe been ridden a little hard during the regular season, but it's an immediate reversal to yanking guys and getting cursed out like they're all Jason Hamill, you know? It is amusing, and that's I'll leave it at that.
You're only allowed to throw over 90 pitches if your last name rhymes with Bub Gardner.
I think on that note.
Well, all right. Tomorrow, John Lester versus Kenta Maeda. We will get together then and see what happens.
Let's get
Comes
down,
in
guys.
four.
Good night, guys.
Night.